You're listening to a program created at IONS, the Institute of Noetic Sciences. Thank you for supporting our research in consciousness and its practical applications for education, healthcare, and a more sustainable world. For more information, visit us at www.noetic.org.
Welcome to the Mysteries of Consciousness series. I'm Lindsay King, and tonight our host is IONS Director of Research, Cassandra Beaton, and she will introduce her guest, Amit Goswami. Welcome, Cassie.
Thank you, Lindsay. Well, it is my great pleasure to welcome Amit Goswami, who has been a longtime friend and colleague of those of us who are researchers at the Institute of Noetic Sciences. And Dr. Goswami is a retired professor from the Theoretical Physics Department at the University of Oregon in Eugene, where he had served since 1968. He truly is a pioneer in the new paradigm of science called Science Within Consciousness. He's the author of many books, including Physics of the Soul, Quantum Creativity, God is Not Dead, and most recently, the documentary, The Quantum Activist. Amit, I'm so happy to be talking to you, and I think I may have gotten your last book incorrect. What is the title of your most recent book?
It's called How Quantum Activism Can Save Civilization.
There you go. How Quantum Activism Can Save Civilization. So happy to have you here. And how are you doing, Amit?
Doing great. Thank you for having me.
Good. Well, I've really been looking forward to this teleseminar because, as you know, I've had a long-time interest in the science of non-duality, and I think you and I recently shared a meal at the Science of Non-Duality Conference in Marin, California. And
Yes. Okay.
Yeah. So I wonder if you could say a little bit for our listeners about your... First of all, just at the most basic level, what is your view on what is non-duality?
Well, non-duality is the idea that dualism, we have two different kinds of experiences. One seems to be external to us, and that is the material world that we all know about, think about, be perturbed about, etc., care about if we are caring people. And also the internal, which is private, which we don't share with anybody else. So it's natural to think that there is two different worlds, one world of consciousness or inner stuff and the other one for outer stuff. And this is called dualism. But then the question enters, how do the two bodies interact, two different worlds interact? They could not without signals. That's what we think in current very materialist science. So the idea of monism, non-dualism, it could not be dual. It has to be non-dual. It turns out that spiritual traditions also have had encountered this particular problem because there, the thinking is there is an entity that is variously called God and other names, and then there is the world that we live in. So the idea comes, how does God interact with the world? And traditions realized pretty early on the same thing, that God could not interact with the world if there are dual entities. So the idea developed there also that it has to be non-dual. Now, what kind of non-duality? Now, there the spiritual traditions and the current materialist science differ drastically. Materialist science says that everything is matter, therefore it's all non-dual. Everything is matter and matter's interaction, material interactions. The spiritual traditions, on the other hand, said that everything is spirit, everything is God, and therefore non-dual. And there has been no meeting of the two grounds because they are so different, and in both there is a problem. Because in the spiritual traditions, the external world cannot be explained very well, so they discard it as illusory. In the materialist view, internal world cannot be explained very well, so they also disregard the internal as epiphenomena. Fortunately, physics has discovered quantum physics about almost 100 years ago. In this view, in the quantum view, which has never been quite appreciated except recently, what happens is that you have an opportunity to integrate the two views. Because in the quantum view, we don't think of things, objects that we experience, as things. Determined objects. Instead, we think of them as possibilities. We have to, because the mathematics tells us so. because there are possibilities of consciousness, the question arises of how does possibility become actuality. And there, a non-dual, new kind of non-duality can develop, which resonates with what Willis Herman first coined, saying that science must be built on the basis of consciousness as the ground of being. So this is possible in quantum physics. In quantum physics, all objects, mental, internal, and external material, they are all possibilities of consciousness to choose from. And everything is within consciousness, mind and matter both. And therefore, you have a different kind of integrative non-duality for the first time.
And so when you say that everything is in consciousness, or maybe a way to say it is that consciousness is primary, are you saying that consciousness is... it sounds like what you're saying is consciousness is not essentially immaterial. In other words, it is both material and immaterial.
Well, that is implicit. What it says actually is that consciousness transcends both material and non-material mind. So although you need to make a statement about what the possibilities are, we say that there are four compartments of possibilities for consciousness to choose from. One is the material that we sense, one is the mental that we think, one is the vital energy that we feel, the other, the highest one, most subtle, is the intuitive archetypes that we intuit. So in this way, we make the statement that reality at a transcendent or primary or unmanifest level consists of consciousness and its possibilities. And then there is the manifest level where experiences of these different worlds come to us. That's the manifest world. So basically the view is that there is only one reality, but within which there is an unconscious part and a conscious part, an unmanifest part and a manifest part. And these concepts are hold together now because of a new experimentally verified idea, which is called non-locality, signalless communication. The old idea was that in order for dual objects to communicate, we have to have a signal between them, which violated a very sacrosanct law of physics called law of conservation of energy. Now we have discovered that in quantum physics, there is not always the need for a signal. There are also non-local communication, which does not require a signal. So how do these different worlds of mind and matter interact? They interact through non-local consciousness.
And it seems as though many of the spiritual traditions over millennia have developed techniques for somehow tapping into this ground of all being from which everything sort of arises and passes away. Do you think that at some level these are coming to the same, you know, a lot of people have said they're coming to the same conclusions that now quantum physics is sort of validating in from the other direction?
I think so. I'm glad you put it this way. I'm you know, when I was at IONS, there was a clear division. Some people were sure of this, like Willis, and others were not so sure of this, so we used to have a little bit of difference of opinion. Now I'm delighted that the director of research of IONS is completely in cognizance with this recognition that, yes, spiritual traditions are basically saying the same thing. There may be a little bit of, touchiness, sensitivity among the spiritual part of the people, in the sense that some of them still continue to feel that this aspect of reality, non-dual consciousness or reality in its suchness, is not really scientifically tractable. So we still have a little bit of debate left. For example, many transpersonal psychologists, very notable among them is Ken Wilber, who still insists that that science and the spiritual traditions are talking about, even quantum science, are talking about two different things. But I think there is gradually a consensus developing that spiritual traditions and the consciousness that quantum physics is discovering are one and the same thing.
Well, and you were saying that some of the folks in the spiritual traditions are touchy. I know that some of the folks in the scientific tradition are touchy. And what do you, how do you respond to sort of the concern or the critique that I also think is grounded in some ways that people are oversimplifying quantum physics, or they're overgeneralizing or using it as too much of a metaphor, and that it's not really accurate that quantum physics is, you know, proving consciousness, or, you know, there's this very atheistic tradition in science, obviously, and there's a lot of discomfort with the idea that, first of all, that quantum physics is being oversimplified and misunderstood, and second, that it's somehow being spiritualized. What do you think about that?
Well, this is a criticism which I, of course, sympathize with, because it is a fact that I used to be a materialist also, and when I was a materialist, you could argue all night, and it would be hard to convince me of any other view. Materialism is a very addictive philosophy. It's also very compelling when you are a believer. But if you really look into quantum measurement theory, which ultimately convinced me, however you want to put it, is that really there is no way out of the mathematical theorem that von Neumann proved, which is that material interactions can never convert possibility into actuality. This is a mathematical theorem. So any way you want to sidestep it, you have to bring in extra interaction. For example, one famous example that many scientists like Stephen Hawking, intelligent galore, I mean, nobody denies, he probably has, in terms of IQ scale, it probably goes out of scale when his intelligence, IQ intelligence is concerned. But this very man is very obtuse when it comes to quantum measurement. Why? Because he thinks that the measurement problem is solved with many worlds. The world bifurcates when you measure, and each bifurcation contains one of the quantum answers, one of the possibilities. Oh. Does this really solve any problem? Solve the problem? It doesn't. Why? Because at the moment of observer looking at an object, what is taking place? An extra interaction has to be postulated. Something is breaking up the universe into its components. So, again, we are really postulating an interaction without explicitly recognizing it or stating it. This implicit violation of the spirit of scientific materialism is absolutely has to be a part of all alternative explanation of quantum measurement paradox, how possibility becomes actuality. It just cannot be solved in any other way but to postulate that there is another force in the world. We call it downward causation to compare with upward causation of the material vintage. So what happens then, all you have to do in order to establish the primacy of consciousness is to show that downward causation exists. And this is very simple to show, because downward causation has specific signature. One is non-locality, the one that we already discussed. And non-locality has been so beautifully verified. The best experiments are transferred potential. Electric potential goes from one brain to another without an electrical connection. This kind of data, I was at a conference with Deepak Chopra just this February, and we had many materialist scientists, including some very well-known names like Ramachandran, a neurophysiologist. And when confronted with this data, Dean Radin was there, and he was saying there are 24 experiments of transfer potential now. And when pressed, Ramachandran agreed that if such data continue to press us and continue to be verified again and again, then he will have to reconsider his materialist position.
Well, Amit, you have done such an amazing job at also applying what you're talking about to so many different arenas, to healing and to a theory of survival after death and reincarnation, and to the endeavor of science, and now to activism. And I want to talk to you more about your latest book on activism, but I also wanted to start by asking you, is that because this is sort of a unifying theory? Is it applicable in all domains because it's somehow really talking about the fabric of reality?
Yes, it is, because we now include all human compartments of experience, right? We are including mental, vital, intuitive, and the physical, of course. So because all domains of our experience that we know of course, it is not ruled out that there are subtler experiences that we are not yet open to. Revolution has not taken us there. But barring that possibility, all the experiences that we are aware of, quantum physics is now enabling us to deal with. And therefore, it is really sometimes it's good to go back to history of science. Materialist science really did not get established. For example, the authority of the church really did not come under question until the Industrial Revolution. Its applications, its real life stuff. When people see applications in that has importance in their real life, in their real living, then only they are ready to consider a change in as big a thing as a worldview. So the integrative worldview that integrates science and spirituality will not really come to fore until, I feel, we apply it to all kinds of phenomena that our experiences touch upon. And therefore, it is important to apply the new paradigm not only to healing, not only to borderline science like reincarnation and survival after death, but also to real aspects of social concern, like how do we live deep ecologically? How do we frame economics? Is the basis of capitalist economics be made spiritual? Should it be? How do we change democracy if the world were spiritual? This kind of question you have to ask. And especially this is interesting and important right now because we know that the social institutions that we have built that have been so well helping us for hundreds of years are now kind of showing signs of deterioration that cannot be ignored. We have a sort of crisis condition, especially in economics, especially in subject of democracy, in politics, that things are sort of breaking down. We have to understand the nature of the breakdown. My point is that it is breaking down because scientific materialism is not compatible with these institutions. And a spiritualization back to an integrative worldview will again bring back the correct direction, the purposive direction of these institutions.
And is that the main premise of, in some ways it's been the premise of many of your books, but can you share with us some of the main premises of your quantum activism model?
I very fondly remember Willie Sherman's work on economics. He used to always say, at that time I was very unprepared to hear it. He was ahead of me, definitely ahead of all of us, I think, in his thinking. And he used to talk about spirituality, bringing spirituality into business, global change. And then when I discovered the idea of new psychophysical parallelism, when consciousness can be thought of as the ground of being for all of our experiences, the physical, vital, mental, and supramental, archetypal, or intuitive, then I realized that Abraham Maslow's suggestion some time ago of hierarchy of needs must be correct. When our material needs are satisfied, we tend to consider higher needs, the subtle needs, like need for vital energy, vitality, need for health. This is a paramount one today. So much concern about health did not exist 100 years ago. People took it for granted that they will be diseased and then they will die. Today, we feel differently. We feel like health is a birthright. Imagine the uproar that Republicans are facing when they suggested changes in the Medicare or Medicaid system. People just not ready to give up their rights to good health. Similarly, there was even an article written by one of the columnists of New York Times about how people are looking for meaningful jobs, and the present job situation has so much to do with people are not satisfied with meaningless jobs anymore. Those you could create very easily, but people are not satisfied with that. They would rather sit at home and search more rather than take a meaningless job. Everybody wants meaningful job, and meaningful jobs are, of course, less. This is a problem, additional problem of today's joblessness. This is the point this columnist was making. So we see that our hunger for the higher needs have gone up enormously. So our economics must be changed now to make it more in accordance with how Willy Sermon used to feel about it. We have to spiritualize it.
And what, taking it even to a more granular level, what would spiritualizing it look like? What exactly does that mean?
We seem to have lost our connection with Amit. So we will try to get him back on the line, Cassie.
Great.
Yeah.
And how easy is it to open the phones for a little bit of discussion while we're waiting, or is that it?
We could totally do that, yeah. If anybody has a question, feel free to press 1 on your phone keypad. And I actually wrote down one while the two of you were talking, Cassie. You had asked the question, is consciousness both material and immaterial? And we heard Amit's answer, but I wonder if you could speak to your thoughts on that same question.
Hello? Well, I think, are you back, Amit?
You know what, I'm sorry, we actually do have Amit back on the line.
Okay.
Hi, Amit. Hi, Amit, welcome back. Please continue. Can you hear me?
Yes. Sorry about
okay,
that.
Here we go.
Something disconnected. Okay.
Yeah, no worries. So my last question for you was, you talked about spiritualizing economics, for example, and I know you may feel the same way about the healthcare system or many other societal institutions, but what exactly does that mean to spiritualize economics? What would that look like? What are a few examples?
Okay, so you go back to Adam Smith and realize that Adam Smith's capitalism is not exactly how we run capitalism today, which is, I call it materialist economics. What has been the difference? Adam Smith really addressed to people's needs. It was a need-based economics. And the idea was that if businesses cater to people's needs, the demand and supply will come to an equilibrium. And this has been the basis of capitalism. If people are free to satisfy people's need and people are free to express their need, then there will be an equilibrium between demand and supply, and prices will stabilize. This was the idea, and this idea has worked by and large, although there were fluctuations, boom and bust. That was a perpetual problem, not just a recent problem of Adam Smith-style capitalism. What changed recently under materialists, of course, behavioral psychology became very popular, and the idea came that human behavior or need can be manipulated. So instead of having real needs and cater to that, the idea grew that if we market, we can create need for anything. And then the idea came that this is good because then we can make economics into a mathematical science. So the need for making economics into a mathematical science, you can call it mathematics envy if you like, that produced a huge change in how economics is done. In the fact that economics no longer really addressed people's real needs or people's emotional needs. There was always, in Adam Smith kind of capitalism, some recognition of people's feelings or their emotions, their real needs. So that went away, and this is producing today's problems because there are artificial needs acts like a balloon kind of thing. So what happens is that some kind of need would be exacerbated. So like, for example, the housing balloon that we recently saw. that produced a disaster, that produced a big recession. The same thing happens towards the end of the 20th century, where we found this high tech that was inflated. A certain need was expected, but it never quite happened. It collapsed. So this kind of thing is the only way, and forever expansion, that's the other thing that happened, because only way we can get out of recession in this new view is to expand the economy. But of course, we live in a finite planet, so how do we forever expand? So the idea of spiritual economics is that if we include mental and vital energy needs in our equation, even intuitive value needs in our equation, then things change drastically, because when in recession time, although we cannot expand indefinitely in the material direction, but we can expand indefinitely in terms of meaning and value, because those domains have no boundaries. Those domains are unlimited. So the zero-sum game of material economics, material sector, no longer applies to the subtle sector. And that enables us to come out of any recession. In fact, that enables us to define economics in a way, to do economics in a way where boom and bust will not take place, which will be a steady state economics. The final problem, of course, is how do we quantify vital energy? How do we quantify meaning? Now, quantifying meaning is still a problem, but we are recently succeeding in quantifying vital energies. As you know very well, I know IONS itself is involved in this very quantitative measurement of vital energy, but we have Carlian photography, we have even biophoton emission tomography. So there are several ways that now we can measure vital energy, and therefore we can quantify at least the vital energy aspect of the economics already. And that is a major aspect, because this is important in healing sector and well-being sector, and therefore already part of the subtle economy can be quantified. It will take a while to quantify meaning, but I think eventually we'll learn to do that. And of course, intuition is even harder to quantify, but I think we can use at least some criteria for the quantification. We have much way to go. I'm not denying that. This is at a very preliminary stage. But I think we can make a quantitative science out of spiritual economics sooner or later.
Well, yeah, and, you know, coming from the perspective of a psychologist as opposed to a physicist, it's funny when you said, you know, one of them we know how to measure and the other we don't. I would have said we're closer to measuring meaning than we are to subtle energy.
Okay, good. I'm glad.
Both are progressing, yeah. And I think that where the Institute of Noetic Sciences has always sort of overlapped with your work and been so... you've been such a kindred spirit for us, is this idea that an over emphasis on materialism, and as you said, even an addictive quality toward complete materialism, has thrown so many of our systems out of balance. And the idea that the subjective experience doesn't matter at all is just an epiphenomenon of material brain processes or, you know, physical processes that are happening, has thrown us into a lot of unnecessary suffering. And, you know, I also look back at a time when over-reliance on subjectivity threw us out of balance, and over-reliance on, you know, religiosity or superstition. And so I think it's at the meeting place of these... I have always thought of this non-duality in the meeting place of the two worlds, and I'm so glad that you're bringing up the four worlds, that it's not just mind and matter, it's mind and matter and energy and then the intuitive or the archetypal domain. It's really fascinating to me, but that it's at the intersection or the integration of those that we may be able to restore some sort of balance, or to find a new balance.
Yes, and you know, the surprise is that the new science, is at the core, at the base level, is not even subjective. This is the best part of it, because when we get down to it, quantum measurement problem can be solved, all the paradoxes of quantum physics can be solved, only when we assume that consciousness is the ground of being, which is an objective idea, only when you assume that the source of downward causation, God, if you will, in quantum physics, which I call quantum consciousness, which is a neutral term, but it is really objective. The choice at the core level, primary level, at the creative level, at the level of the new, is always objective. What is the criterion that consciousness uses? Evolution. So when evolution is included in the way we do quantum physics, in the way of why and how downward causation. So downward causation is, there is only one criterion for downward causation, which is completely objective, which is that, is this choice going to take us towards further the cause of evolution? What's the purpose of evolution in the new science? Purpose of evolution is to bring the archetypes into manifestation. So it's a neat way, this idea that came from ancient traditions, spiritual traditions, that it is important to live the virtues. It's important for us all to become virtuous. It's a neat way of connecting that and the idea of evolution that came from science, from Darwin and others. Very beautiful compromise, I feel. If the materialist scientists were not so emotionally attached to the idea of scientific materialism, I think that they readily would see that that this is wonderful, because you are developing an inclusive science, whereas materialist science is exclusive. I mean, no denying it, because it completely ignores the causal efficacy of all our internal experiences. And, you know, everybody knows, including Richard Feynman, who was a great scientist of the last century, everybody knows, every scientist knows, that there is a basic problem that Newton was aware of, Galileo was aware of, everyone was aware of, and therefore some of the great scientists who have always believed in God, in spirituality, you know, like Einstein. Because why? Because they knew that the laws of science themselves cannot be explained without assuming an archetypal value domain. So, you know, just a simple question, where do laws of science come from, which no scientist can avoid? Could they come from after the Big Bang? No, they could not arise from particle interactions. They just, there is no scope for it. So that one question has converted many scientists from, rescued many scientists from the grip of scientific materialism. You know, we have to just be patient, I guess. Upton Sinclair used to say that when somebody makes a living having a wrong belief, then to change that wrong belief is very tough. So I think we have to all be very patient with scientific materialists, and eventually they will come around, because there is just no way around it.
Well, I have one question about what you just said. What do you mean when you say bringing the archetypes into manifestation?
Okay, like love is an archetype. If you think about it, your opinion or your representations of love in thinking is not the same as my representation of love in thinking. So in what we intuit may be the same, but when we put it in terms of thought, represent it in thought, it becomes different, because your programmed or learned repertoire with which you express your thinking is not exactly the same as my repertoire with which I express my thinking, right? Okay. So there is always a subjectivity in the thought that expresses the archetype. So archetype is the supramental aspect of thought, the context in which thought takes place. So this distinction is very important. So when we manifest, what do we mean? Manifest, first of all, as thought, but that has very little use, because thought cannot change us. Thought really cannot manifest in any permanent way the archetype. So what we say in spiritual traditions have always emphasized that live a virtue. Don't just think about it, live it. So live love. How do I live love? I live love by repeatedly subjecting myself to love experiences. And when we do that, neurophysiologists have discovered, this is the greatest discovery, I think, of neurophysiology for everybody, which is that the plasticity of neurons is practically unlimited. So neurons always make new circuits of our experiences. So as I go on exploring love in my relationships, there will be brain circuits of love. Then we can say that this archetype, love, which we at first could only intuit, and then second we could think and we could feel representations, and then third we could even represent them by a circuit in the brain which will be available anytime I need it. So that would be a manifestation of the archetype of love.
And that is just that's a really lovely explanation of, you know, sometimes the phrase the sweet spot, you know, it's right where consciousness meets matter. It's right where our inner experience and our intention and attention meet the physical world. So thank you for that. And I'd love to invite us to open the phones now because I'm sure our listeners have comments and questions.
Okay, this is the time to ask questions. So if you have a question for Amit, please press 1 on your phone keypad now, and I will bring a mic to you. Again, just press 1 if you have a question. And while we're waiting for somebody to get their question ready, we'll ask one that was emailed in to us. This comes from David. Is it possible to create a deliberate mental connection with the quantum field in a fully, quote, awakened state? And if yes, how?
Well, deliberate mental connection is a huge difficulty. The reason is that we live in the ordinary consciousness that we call ego. And in this consciousness, we do not choose. As I said earlier, downward causation for anything new, creative, is always done. The causation comes from a non-local consciousness. That is beyond the ego. So we have to go through some of the practices that spiritual tradition suggests, some of the practices that transpersonal psychology has adopted, and quantum activism propagates the same ideas. We have to be prayerful. That is a very good strategy. So we have to intend. We pray, and then we become silent. If we do that, maybe quantum consciousness will cooperate with us and choose what we are mindfully intending. So mindful intention certainly is the beginning, but we have to go through this process, creative process for intention to actually come true. If you follow the process and when you get a hang of it, you will become not only a person who has freedom, but also a person who becomes very creative. That is what creative people do. They know that their doing must be supplemented, complemented by being silent, so that quantum processing can take place, and if there are new possibilities to explore in the processing, in other words, if you surrender your ego stuff a little bit, then the new possibilities can come into your mental processes. You can start the process by your old ego, but you must not stay within the boundaries of the ego. If you can do that, gradually relax the ego so that new can come into the unconscious processing, then the choice can become creative, choice can become free. Okay? That's the process. Thank you for the question.
Great. Thank you very much. And if you would like to ask a question, please press 1 on your phone keypad now, and we'll bring you a mic. In the meantime, we'll ask this. Oh, looks like we do have someone. Here is a question from Shyama. Shyama, you have the mic.
Thanks. Well, Mr. Goswami, I'm very convinced that the unmanifest, the consciousness, does generate the manifest world, the material world that we see. But I have a hard time visualizing how this happens. The only thing that gives me any insight is the idea of vibration, that consciousness vibrates and that that the material world is also created by vibration. Can you give me any better way to visualize this?
Well, vibration is not bad, because you know these possibilities that quantum physics gives us, they are waves of possibilities. So you can call them originating from some vibrations, not of a material substance, but from substances like vital energy, substances like meaning. It's a little bit subtle, so you have to allow yourself to imagine and be subtle. It's a good exercise, though, because in today's world, we sometimes become too gross. You know, in another parlance, we stay in our low chakras. Why not investigate the higher chakras, which are already talking about subtle feeling, like love, like expression, like satisfaction? These are subtle feelings. So as you go into subtler way of thinking of vibration, you think of subtler vibrations of subtler substance, then you are getting close to these possibilities that you are talking about. Okay? Do it. You'll get the hang of it. Once you are convinced that there is a consciousness which is the ground of all being, nothing is beyond you. It's just a question of letting go and just delve into the subtle.
Okay. Thank you, Shyama, for the call. If you would like to ask a question, please press 1 on your phone keypad now. And we will ask this question that was emailed in by Regini. Would love to hear you talk a bit about how duality and non-duality exist simultaneously and the role of paradox in learning how to live in both simultaneously without making one better or more important than the other.
What a beautiful question. You are a very, very subtle person already. Well, reality is ultimately non-dual, but that does not exclude the duality of our experiences. For example, we do have the duality of internality and externality. The gross material does appear to be external to us, whereas the internal is experienced as private, as subtle, and we cannot deny that it is private. It is internal indeed. So that duality, internal, external, reappears. Why? This is the nature of physics that does it. In the material world, matter is both gross at the macro level and subtle at the micro level. So although quantum physics dominates the subtle, at the gross level, Newtonian physics tend to come out once again to be dominant. Newtonian physics is an approximation to quantum physics in this domain. Quantum physics ultimately is true, but the possibilities are possibility structure of quantum physics is suppressed. Because of it, we have grossness. In the subtle, the quantum movement is never suppressed, and therefore it's subtle all the way. And because of that subtlety, we experience as internal. So in this way, we can now understand how the dualities are occurring. Consciousness and matter, that's another duality. Again, we understand it by recognizing that if we assume consciousness is the ground of being, then the duality disappears, because the duality is clearly taking place because when possibility becomes actuality, the material manifestation takes place. And we have that subject and object. Subject is subtle consciousness. Object is material gross. So again, that duality has the origination in the quantum nature of the world and the nature of quantum measurement. So in this way, what the new science is allowing us to do is to understand and integrate all these dualities that we experience. So our experience shows duality, so duality is never out of the equation. It's always there, and we have to respect it. But at the same time, we are now understanding, truly understanding the reason that duality exists. And we are also verifying experimentally that beyond duality, there really is a non-dual interconnectedness that we call our consciousness. So this is the most important thing. You know, Dean Radin, one of the greatest experimentalists of the new science, wrote a book called The Conscious Universe. It is really wonderful how our experiments lead us to the fact that there is a cosmic interconnectedness that really is non-dual, out of which all the dualities arise because of the nature of the quantum measurement. Okay? Thank you for the question.
Okay, thank you very much. Okay, if you would like to ask a question, press 1 on your phone keypad now. And in the meantime, we do have a question that was emailed in from Shaima. And the question is, do you have any suggestions about 2012?
Well, just don't worry about it. That's the only suggestion I can give you. But if you are serious about the question, then I think it's a good metaphor for the fact that we do have, I do believe that we are very close to a real evolutionary change that is coming to us. We are mental beings. We have been so far in what Aurobindo and Ken Wilber and Teilhard de Chardin have called the mental, rational mind. We have gone through stages earlier, like the physical mind. We have gone through a stage called the vital mind. Now we are in the rational mind. What we do is that mind gives meaning. So in the physical mind, mind gives meaning to the physical. In the vital mind, mind gives meaning to the vital energies, to our feelings. And then in the current era, which started with the discovery of the plow, agriculture, and then continued through industrial and technological and high-tech current technology, all that. And here we are looking at the meaning of mind itself, abstract thinking. This is called the rational mind, right? So beyond this is what? Beyond this is the final stage of mental evolution, which is mind will start giving meaning to intuitions, values, archetypes. Now, this has started, of course. I mean, there are a few people, we call them mystics. They do that and they make representations in their brain. They have brain circuits of love, and that is why there are such loving spirits like Jesus, like Buddha, and so forth. But it has not been evolved yet in all humanity. So we remain, humanity, bulk of humanity remain violent, remain competitive. You know, Hawaii materialist biologists make all these sociobiological models, which are partially true, which is not untrue. We are very competitive. We are quite violent. But that's not the final stage of our evolution yet. So these people, I have written a book on it also called Creative Evolution. We envision that the next stage of biological creativity will take us to a world where human beings will have brain circuits of love en masse, in which case we will get into really having the capacity, using Ter's word, to use the energies of love. Imagine that. So that stage in my reckoning, in the reckoning of a great biologist named Rupert Sheldrake, in the reckoning of Ken Wilber, we all anticipate eagerly that there would be such a stage very soon. And it is a fact that evolution, big stages of evolution, macroevolution, always takes place when a catastrophe arises in the environment. Simply because our survival need kicks many of us into the domain of creativity, where ordinarily, when there is no urgency, people tend to be a little lazy. So maybe 2012 is a kind of signpost, kind of a metaphor for such a crisis or catastrophe taking place, out of which there will come the biological creativity that will propel us to this new stage of evolution of the intuitive mind. Okay? Thank you.
Okay, thank you very much. All right, our final question will come from Alan. Alan, you have the mic.
Thank you. I'm just wondering, when you speak of love, is that something that is knowable? Is it? You know, do you see this being a subtle field of energy, subtle energy, or coherence, or you know, is it something that you can explain?
Yes, I think it is. It is knowable to some extent. Okay, I mean, it is knowable to the extent that you have experienced romantic love, right, in the heart chakra. Your heart throbs when, I don't know if you have a love partner in your life who makes your heart throb. But I still do, if not throbbing, I experience warmth in my heart oftentimes when people I love comes into my consciousness as a stimulus. So that's one level of giving language to love. Another level of language to love is, of course, mental. Now, this is not as profound as the movement in the heart chakra, but this one is the one that we use most often. Unfortunately, of course, mind also has...
Oh, sadly, we lost him again.
Oh, it's hard right now. There's so many little disconnections.
Yeah.
Did you have, Alan, do you have anything to say back to what you were hearing?
Well, no, I was going to ask, a follow-up question on that, whether or not, when we feel, he spoke about feeling love. But that still leaves the question, what is it that generates that feeling? Is the vibrating feel of energy that is maybe coming from another person, or is it, do we come into coherence with a field of love, an energetic or coherent field that is in space?
Yeah, I mean, I think one of the things that Dr. Goswami was getting at was it's such a multi-component, if you want to say construct. I don't know that I'd really say it was a construct, but at least in our minds, it's a construct that has the mental component, the energetic component, the physical component. And then I think there are other levels also where when we talk about consciousness, there is sort of a very personal consciousness where I am aware of my current experience right now, what I'm seeing and hearing through my senses, what I'm feeling inside. And then there is sort of a collective consciousness, which is what we are collectively, either as a group or as a society or even as sort of a globe, all conscious of. So one element of a collective consciousness might be that, generally now we all agree that the earth is round. That's one sort of coherent collective consciousness that we have. And then when we get to more controversial issues, there's a lot of fragmentation in our collective consciousness. And then there's the level of consciousness that Amit was talking about being the fundamental ground of all being that transcends even that collective level. And what I just heard you saying is that maybe there is a personal love, a personally experienced love, physically, mentally, emotionally. Maybe then there is a collective love that is sort of shared, and we know now from, or we're beginning to find out how there are these other regarding emotions like love and gratitude that are really experienced at a dyadic or a group level through things like mirror neurons, and, there seems to be an intersubjective field between us all that is beginning to be elucidated scientifically and certainly has been elucidated in a spiritual level. And what you're really getting at is what is the actual fabric of that large capital L love? And maybe that's at that same level of consciousness. And is it just when we're resonating or open to that that we're able to feel that more transpersonal level of love or sense it?
And yeah, Cassie, we do have Amit on the line, so he can answer you, Cassie, and finish Alan's question.
Okay, very good. I'm sorry that I got out of line once again. Cassie, that was very good. I think that gives most of the answer, except to add that when we come in tune with quantum consciousness, with this non-local interconnectedness, then another level of love can be felt with even with a partner, which really transcends what you have experienced as even the feeling in the heart chakra, or certainly just the mental love, which is a very different coloration altogether, with which we are never quite satisfied. You know, our especially our female partners often remind us of that, male people, of that, that you are not feeling, you're just saying the words. And so this is about a creative experience of love. We do have intuitive experiences of love, but they are very fleeting. When we creatively discover the archetype of love, creative experiences enable us to quantum leap from the mind level to the supramental level of the archetypes themselves, so to speak. They allow us to get a very momentary but very real experience of love as truth, because this supramental domain has a major archetype called truth, which is things as they are. So we really get to see love as it is. And when we have such an experience, then even when we are back in our ego, we can really see the otherness of the other and feel the love for someone who I love, not because he or she is mine something, my spouse, my partner, like that, my friend, but just because he or she is who she is. Sometimes we, in New Age jargon, we say unconditional love. We don't impose a condition that you have to be my something in order for me to love you. That kind of love that flows in Christianity, there is a word called agape. In Buddhism, we call it compassion. So it is that love that we're referring to, and quantum physics completely agrees, theory of creativity completely agrees that we all can experience love in this sense. I hope that answered your question.
Well, I like your expression, you know, of love relative to truth. I think there's certainly a correlation there. But I'm wondering, could you accept that possibly there could be a field with which we can come into coherence, our body, our heart, our mind, our brains. We can come into coherence with a subtle field that operates throughout the universe. And, you know, perhaps that's the Akashic field, whatever.
Could it be a field there that
we don't know much about yet, that we will find out that is what love really is. It is a field that we can come into.
Can you give me the microphone, Lindsay?
We
have talked about this is the archetypal universe that you're talking about. The position of quantum new science is that within consciousness we have four kinds of worlds of possibility. Aside from material sensing, vital feeling, mental meaning, thinking world, we also have the intuitive world of the archetypes. So love is an archetype. When you say that, I hope you didn't miss our earlier discussion. When you say that, this is the world that you're referring to, that's what we mean. And what I was saying earlier, which didn't make much sense to me because you probably missed that part of the discussion, when I take a quick creative quantum leap from the mind to the supermind, this is the level we touch. So even I are just talking about the same thing, except, you know, you missed the earlier discussion.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, thanks, Alan, for your questions. And it's time to wrap up our discussion, so we'll turn the mic over to Cassie.
Okay, well, it has just been so wonderful to have you, Amit. Thank you so much for your longtime friendship of IONS and for coming on the call tonight. And I just wanted to give you the opportunity, if you have anything that you would like to let people know about on the call.
Well, I want to thank you, Cassandra, Cassie, so much. This has been a wonderful energy in the discussion. It is because the two of us are doing it, along with Lindsay, along with all the people. It's a collective consciousness that we created, and thank everyone for it. If you want more information about my work, I would invite everyone to first of all, see this documentary that Lindsay introduced in the beginning called The Quantum Activist, produced by Reese Stewart and Renee Slade, two wonderful filmmakers, very creative film, which has much to say about this new movement that we are beginning that will take us to the next, or help us to reach that final stage of mental evolution. Called the intuitive mind. So, and of course, please, if you want to know about my work, please read the newest book called How Quantum Activism Can Save Civilization, because what we have been talking about, what Cassandra and I just discussed about, is really the aspect of civilization. Civilization means bringing the archetypes into representation. There is no civilization if we don't know how to love. There is no civilization with current biological paradigm of materialism. There is no civilization there. If we were really sociobiological people, we would be killing each other whenever something that you want and something that I want comes into debate, something comes into a competition. So we are allowed to be human beings surviving with each other to the extent that we are civilized. And we are civilized, thank God. We are more civilized today than we were 1,000 years ago. We are less civilized today than we were 50 years ago. The reason for that is scientific materialism has taken hold, and this hold is killing civilization, literally. I really feel very strongly about it. And do not feel that we should be ashamed of talking about this. And I feel the opposite. We must recognize that we have become very polarized because of this advent of scientific materialism. We have two parties in the country. One party believes in the old spirituality. They believe in values, but they don't believe in creativity. They're conservative. So that is sort of meaningless. If you are not creative, you cannot really experience values. You only repeat other people's opinions about values, and that's as empty and as hypocritical as anything. Democrats have become materialists. So this is the polarization, materialism versus spirituality. Democrats don't have values. Republicans have values, but they are dead values. They are more even values of the past. We have to bring in a new kind of creative force in the politics, in the economics, in the ways that our social institutions are, in our education, in the way we partake in religion. In other words, in every aspect of life, of course, health and healing and so forth. So this is my appeal to you. If you like this show, if you like this conversation between Cassandra and me, please think about quantum activism. Please think about transforming yourselves and the world using these quantum principles that we talked about, like non-locality. Thank you.
We hope you enjoyed this program from IONS. Located in Petaluma, California, the Institute of Noetic Sciences is a nonprofit membership organization that conducts scientific research into the potentials and powers of consciousness. To learn more about IONS, please visit us at www.noetic.org. or call toll-free 877-769-4667.